Welcome to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and my co-host, E.R. Tucker, should be joining us in progress. I have a show that is dedicated to climate change, our favorite topic here, as things do heat up across the planet, and we see the impacts every day. Going to be focusing in a couple of segments today on different aspects of that. We're going to start by playing some of the testimony that you may have missed because it took place overnight last week, a week and 2 days ago, Monday night to Tuesday, Stay Up for Climate. There were speeches given on the Senate floor that, of course, organized by Brian Schatz of Hawaii. Also, Barbara Boxer took part, and our climate hero, Sheldon Whitehouse, who holds talks whether there's a full chamber or not every week on Wake Up to the Climate Crisis. And since so many people did miss that, since it was overnight, and that's what got the attention that it did get, and it did get picked up by mainstream media, they went for about 15 hours straight, almost a dozen that I've heard of that took part, each speaking for anywhere from 2 to 20 minutes on it, all aspects of the climate crisis. So we thought we'd play one for you. We'll begin that in just a moment. It's Tom Udall. He, of course, has been a leader on the climate change front. He is a senator from New Mexico, and it's not that his was any better than anyone else's, but he has been a longtime champion on climate change, so not new to the table at all, but someone who really has been following this closely. Of course, he comes from a family of environmentalists. So we'll play you some of that testimony in just a minute. And then in our other segments, we're going to be focusing on the health impacts of climate change. That is something we have touched on, but not really completely delved into here on the program. We're going to speak to someone who's written a book on that very subject, Linda Marsa. She is a journalist and a scientist, so perfect person to communicate some of the urgency around that. And then we'll also be speaking with someone from the National Wildlife Federation, I hope, on how climate change is going to be hurting college spirit. And if you're curious about that, well, I'll just leave it at that. But put it this way, college mascots are now endangered. So you can put two and two together and figure out what that is going to be about. But I think you'll want to join us for that conversation coming up. I want to thank the folks at PRN for putting together this show behind the scenes for the last few years. This will be my second to the last program on the Progressive Radio Network. It's been a decade. Exactly 10 years ago, end of March, I started doing environmental interview programs on Air America. I was on that program, that network, with a show called Eco Talk for several years until Air America finally went off the air. And since then, have been pretty much on the internet, first on Voice America, and then also, of course, on PRN. And it's been wonderful to have this outlet and to be able to interview the top green leaders, especially on climate issues and communicating urgent environmental challenges. And now I'm going to work on a book with my co-host, D.R. Tucker, going to be speaking on college campuses, and also going to be knocking on a few doors a few more times, mainstream media, that means network or syndicated radio or television stations, to see if any of them might see a need for one program to talk about all these issues where there's, you know, a broader, larger mainstream audience. That's really who we need to reach. But none of that would be possible if I had not been able to stay in touch with the environmental experts that I hope you enjoy hearing, and also all of you, the listeners, for telling us what you'd like to hear more of, what you'd like to hear less of. I did hear from a few of you a couple weeks ago, said, stop talking about John Hannity. Sorry about that. I'm a little bit obsessed with Fox News, mostly because so many of them continue to stay on the air while they're spewing nonsense and absolutely flying in the face of what majority of credible scientists have long been saying, and it just burns me, pardon the expression, that they continue to get away with it, get paid a lot of money for it, think it's funny, and you know, occasionally have me on to spar with them, but it's more serious than that. So just want to let those of you know why it is that I've been so, it's really just a symptom, but it's really a good target, because let's face it, they target we tree huggers all the time and want to mock us, and oh, isn't it funny, but of course there's nothing funny about it. But from that end of the spectrum to some of the heroes who have really not only been speaking loudly and often on trying to get our legislators to do more on fighting climate change, but actually stayed up last week for into the wee hours to talk about what we're facing and what we can do about it. Here's one of those speeches from Tom Udall.
Madam Chair, for your very kind words. Senator Boxer is the chairman of the committee that deals with climate change legislation and has been ever present in terms of trying to see if we can come up with a bipartisan solution and get legislation. And I was just very proud to serve on her committee when The Obama administration came in and the Senate sat down to work and was really trying to do something about climate change. And unfortunately, we ran out of time, but we still, as you can see by the number of senators that have spoken, we're up to 30 now, we still have incredible passion about this issue. We know it's a serious problem. The American people know it's a serious problem, and we want something done. Now, what have we learned? What have we learned? I've watched my colleagues over the night. I guess I'm number 30th, and I've watched what they've been talking about. One of the things we've learned, and the tradition here in the Senate is normally if we're talking like this, and our colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle want to come down and exchange with us, they can do that. That's our tradition, to say we speak and then they speak. What we've ended up seeing is one Republican senator show up in this 12-plus, 13-hour period, is my understanding. I think I'm right on that. I've asked people that were here. That was what was reported on NPR this morning. And that, to me, is tremendously sad, because in the glory days of the Senate in the 1960s, when major, 60s and 70s, major environmental legislation, major conservation organization legislation. Remember these, the Wilderness Act, the Clean Water Act, Clean Air, Endangered Species. These were passed with significant bipartisan support. And we don't see that effort today, and it just makes me very sad. And that we're here all night and trying to engage and trying to say this is something the American people believe is serious, and we need to engage on this issue. So what I'm going to do today is talk a little bit about New Mexico and how New Mexico and the Southwest are at the bullseye when it comes to climate change. And what do I mean by that? Well, if New Mexico is at one temperature, and you compare that with the rest of the country, so let's say in the rest of the country you have a 1% rise, New Mexico's going to be 2%. So there's the doubling effect in the Southwest. So this is just a map of New Mexico, but we're talking the Southwest period. And first of all, let me talk a little bit about the drought that we've had. Here we are from June 2011 to the present, a drought of epic proportions. The U.S. Drought Monitor shows that more than 90% of New Mexico is in extreme drought. Northern and western New Mexico got some precipitation last year, but several other areas of the state remain mostly dry. You can see this is extreme. The other is moderate, and so you add it together, a significant impact. And these are the kinds of challenges we're going to face with climate change. And just to talk a little bit more about these impacts, I'd now like to go to chart two and look at the snowpack in northern New Mexico and southern Colorado watersheds. They only range from one half to three quarters of what normally would be there. So this is a winter picture, normally the kind of thing you would see in northern New Mexico at this time of year. You would see a massive snowpack. Why is that important? That's important because in the summer, when we start using the water, we start irrigating, the farmers start doing things, they recharge the aquifer. And so you have, if you don't have a snowpack, you don't have that kind of recharge, and you don't have the storage levels of drinking water. Just to pick one of our communities, Santa Fe, New Mexico, gets 40% of its water from the ground. And it gets another big chunk of the water from reservoirs. Those reservoirs are fed when you have a snowpack and when the ground gets recharged and it flows off and flows as it flows into those reservoirs. So that is something that makes a huge impact when you don't have a snowpack and when you have a decreasing amount of precipitation. We're going to see more and more of this as we move down the road when you look at the modeling that's been done by the experts that are working on this. Now, this is a particularly, this next slide, particularly disturbing slide in terms of water. Once again, I remember it being roughly at this place on the Rio Grande just last year in the middle of the summer. This photo is showing a very meager amount of water. When I was there last summer, there was no water. It was completely dry. So here, the river that flows the whole length of the state of New Mexico gets down to southern New Mexico. El Paso and Texas rely on it. Mexico relies on it, our neighbor to the south. There was no water to be seen. And so it once again dramatically shows the impacts and what the impacts of climate change and the impacts as we see this move down the road. Let me talk about one experience with ranchers and farmers that I think really brings this home in terms of water. There's a flood control project in Tucumcari, New Mexico. It was created in the middle of the Great Depression. Everybody in the community invested in it. The federal government invested in it. And what these projects do is they have dual purpose. One is if there's a big flood, to try to control the flood. The second thing is to hold the water so when you get to the irrigation season, you can have irrigated farmland. And so they did this in the 1930s. Several hundred farmers and ranchers, I think about 600-700, rely on this project and have been relying on this project since the 1930s. I visited this community recently and learned from the people that run the project and from the farmers and ranchers that in the last couple of years, zero water, no water at all. They had never seen this ever since the 1930s, even though when we went through just very serious conditions in the 50s, it was thought to be one of the biggest droughts, no water. The last 10 or 12 years, this particular project, same thing, very, very little water. And so what ends up happening as a result of that? Farmers and ranchers cannot plant. The ranchers sell off their herds. Just to show you how dramatic it is in New Mexico, we have ended up seeing 50% of our cattle herd sold off this last year. So people are hurting so badly in terms of this drought that they're unable to keep their livestock on the land, and they end up having to pull the livestock off. So this is a devastating impact to people that live closest to the ground. I've been out on the land in New Mexico with conservationists and with scientists and talked to them about climate change. And one of the things that I try to describe in what I've learned, and I think this is what Chairman Boxer's talking about when I made a presentation in one of the committees, is if you take the modeling that's been done on climate change in the Southwest, and particularly focusing on New Mexico. And what you do with that modeling is you ask yourself, where are we going to be 50 years down the line? And so we know that the modeling, because we've just had a study at Los Alamos National Laboratory that says by 2050, that's less than 50 years, we're not going to have any forests in New Mexico. So much of this area of northern New Mexico and down here, forests throughout that area. So they're saying it looks like no forests. Much less water, as I've just talked about. Water that's unable, you don't get snowpack, you can't charge the system back. And the most dramatic thing that was described to me is what happens here is 50 years from now, if you use these numbers, just these are the conservative numbers. These aren't the ones where many of the scientists nowadays are saying we have We're taking conservative numbers, but many scientists are saying it's happening quicker. It's moving faster. And what they tell us, imagine as on a computer screen how you can drag things. If you click on New Mexico and drag it 300 miles to the south, New Mexico here is over 300 miles, so you're moving the top of New Mexico all the way down 300 miles to the south. What do you get? You're in the middle of the Chihuahuan Desert in Mexico. And so what was a dramatic forested area, what was an area was very acceptable to farming and ranching, devastating impacts. So those are the kinds of things, and I could go on and on here, but the thing that I, about the impacts, and we could talk about how one of our reservoirs at Elephant Butte has the lowest level in 40 years. This was a great recreational lake, which people used this is a picture in June of 1994 of the reservoir. Here's the picture today. So dramatically different. The thing that I wanted to highlight as I close here, because I know that we're trying to wrap up after we've been going for many, many hours, is that New Mexico has been focusing on solutions. One of the solutions that's right at the front of us sitting there is renewable energy. We know that we're going to have to deal with this problem one way or another. It's much better to deal with it earlier. So in New Mexico, we're doing everything we can foster the solar power industry. This slide, you can see solar power to beat coal prices in New Mexico. Right now, the solar installations that are going up are very competitive in terms of coal. Wind power. This is, once again, in New Mexico, we have installed wind capacity of 778 megawatts. New Mexico ranks 19th for a total of megawatts installed. And so we have all over New Mexico, up on our mesas, as you can see here, these wind turbines that are collecting the energy from the wind. The number of wind turbines, 575. New Mexico ranks 17th for the number of utility-scale wind turbines. Current wind generation in New Mexico provided by the wind is 6.1%. So just a few years ago, when we put in place a renewable electricity standard, we had a lower level, and we've been pushing that up. And that's one of the things that we need to do at the national level. My cousin and I worked in the House of Representatives before we were in the Senate to get a national renewable electricity standard. So this is something we have to do that is a solution. We shouldn't, as I laid out all of the things earlier, the devastating impacts, one of the things that we should realize is there are solutions. They're here today. The technology is perfected, and we're able to put those into place. Now, the final area of renewable energy that I wanted to talk about is this is called, and we have huge potential here in the Southwest, it's called advanced biofuels. And in New Mexico, this is a facility. I've been to this facility and seen the experimentation that they're doing. They have taken land, and they are farming algae. And what eventually ends up with this algae is it's refined, and the algae becomes a very, very good fuel. So that is something that is once again a solution to this problem. And so we shouldn't despair when we look at the impacts of climate change, and when we look in the future as to what people are going to predict, because we know we have the ability to cultivate solutions. And I'm just very proud of my state, Chairman Boxer, how we have really worked to cultivate these sources of renewable energy, and we're moving it up with our renewable electricity standard. We're moving it up higher and higher every year. So let me, I'm just very, very proud to have been a part of this effort. The 30th senator to stand up and speak about this. I guess we've been going about 13, 14 hours. I can't close without mentioning I wish we had our friends and colleagues on the Republican side of the aisle down here to engage us. I don't know what to conclude, but the either they don't care about this or don't want to engage with us. We only had one in this 14-hour period, one Republican senator show up. This sure isn't like the glory days of the Senate when so many Republicans participated with Democrats to tackle the big problems that faced our country. And this is a problem that faces the entire world. So we need the United States united and the entire world working together in a cooperative way to solve this.
And that was Senator Tom Udall. I hope you enjoyed hearing that. A lot of folks missed all those talks. They went on for 15 hours, that being just one example of the urgency expressed by many senators, again, all Democrats. And I think Tom Udall said it best. You know, where are the Republicans other than James Inhofe, who came to mock the entire proceeding? Shame on them. We're going to take a turn now, still focusing on climate change, of course, but this time the health